Celebrating the connection with our pets. This is Animal Radio, featuring your dream team, veterinarian Dr. Debbie White and groomer Joey Villani. And here are your hosts, Hal Abrams and Judy Francis.
Another incredible show today. The Pet FBI will be here.
Dun, 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 dun.
Yeah, I'm a little...
What'd you do, Hal?
Are they after me? Are they here for me? I don't know. We'll have to find out. You'll have to wait to find out. Also on today's show, Susan Thixton, and you probably don't know her just by her name. I will tell you, she has a website called thetruthaboutpetfood.com, and she's going to tell you about the crimes and the lies and the truth about pet foods.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I know.
Doesn't that seem like that's always something, like always going on? Something with pet food that's just underhanded.
Yep.
Well, you know, most of these companies, they're owned by one or two companies. I think there's like three or four major players right now in the business. They've all consolidated, and it's all about bottom line money.
Money.
And what they will do and how it will affect your animals. And
how to cut costs and make fillers. And
all that stuff. And, you know, what you think is healthy may not be healthy, or what you think is crap may actually be okay. We'll find out more in just a few minutes with her right here on Animal Radio. Lori Brooks, what's happening over there in the newsroom?
Oh, got a great story coming up. A very much loved and treasured family pet is reunited with his humans after 2 months and 3,700 miles.
Oh, I heard
it's
about
a great
this.
Story.
You're going to want to stick around for that. But first, your phone calls. Let's go to the phones right now. Hi, Elise. How are you doing?
Okay. How are you?
Good. You're calling about a ferret. Is that correct?
That is correct. We have a ferret about 2 years now. Don't know how old he was when we got him, and all of a sudden he just looks like a bag of bones. He seems happy, he bounces around, he eats like everything, but he's scrawny.
Very skinny fella, huh? Well, Elise, I love ferrets. They're one of my favorite critters to see here at the office, so I just adore them. They're a lot of fun, but they are challenging because they do have some weird things that come up, and I know you said everything sounds like it's going along normal, but I'm going to kind of probe a little bit deeper here. You said you've had him 2 years. What is he eating? What kind of food are you feeding?
Usually the Marshall's ferret food.
Okay,
or any quality ferret food from the pet store.
Okay, good. And as far as when he's running and playing, do you ever see any kind of problems with his mobility? Does he ever seem tired out or weak?
I don't see him all the time. He's in my son's room 100%, but whenever I've seen him, he's just bouncing around, happy, just skinny.
All right. Well, the challenging thing is if I could put my little hands on him right now, there's a couple things that I would be doing. One is in any ferret, but particularly in a younger ferret, if we see them losing weight, we want to feel around and we actually check for the possibility that they might have eaten something that could be causing a problem. And I've seen ferrets eat anything from erasers to plastic toys to, gosh, you name it. They are very attracted to some different types of soft, rubbery things. So in a younger ferret that's losing weight, even if they're not even having outward signs, I'm going to look for some kind of foreign object. And in some cases, they can even develop hairballs to the size of an obstruction, and that can affect their food absorption and you know, their ability to eat enough for what they need. Now, if I'm looking at an older ferret, there's going to be some other things that I would look at, and they are, unfortunately, very prone to some different types of aging diseases, some cancers. Some weight loss-related issues, I would look at the problem with the pancreas that's called insulinoma. And this is something that I would pretty easily check. I would, you know, get him into my office. We would ask him to not eat for maybe 4 hours, which for a ferret is, you know, a long time because those guys are grazing constantly. But we would check a blood sugar, and that helps to see if we might have a possibility with an insulinoma, which causes low blood sugar readings. And that in ferrets can be something that can cause not only weight loss, but some other signs such as muscle weakness or troubles with the back legs or even some diarrhea. Then there's some other types of older diseases, which, you know, not to scare you, but, you know, this is where a good thorough veterinary exam is really important because we also look for types of things like lymphoma, which is a type of a cancer that ferrets somehow just love to get. So those kind of things I would be putting my fingers on them and feeling and looking, and we might even see about doing, like I said, the blood work or even an x-ray to kind of check those things out. But a skinny ferret is not a healthy ferret, even if on the outside he's telling you that by his actions. So I'd definitely, you know, get the little critter checked out and see what we can come up with.
Okay, so bring him to the vet is what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And then I would say, you know, be alert to those things as far as his appetite, making sure that when you feed him, he eats it. Watch his bowel movement so you can give a, you know, a kind of educated report as far as, like, in the last week, this is what he's been doing in his poops. Here's a fresh sample of the poop so the veterinarian can see that. And then that may help kind of steer the conversation. And then, you know, just be prepared. You know, I'd read up a little bit about the insulinoma and the lymphoma because those are really big ferret issues that we do see in the older categories. And, you know, be armed with information. That is the best thing I can tell you, because ferrets, they are a lot of fun, but they do kind of have their little eccentricities when it comes to health things. But I got to say, they are the best to watch. You probably enjoy watching the antics, I imagine.
They're a riot. They're hysterical. But, you know, I love all the animals. We have dogs, we have a cat, we have the ferret. You know, we're just, you know, the zoo of Pennsylvania.
Well, that's what we love, people who love animals. So thank you so much for your call, Elise. Give us a call here at Animal Radio.
Well, don't forget you can get your fix of Animal Radio anytime you want with the Animal Radio app for iPhone and Android. Download it now. It's made possible by Fear-Free Happy Homes, helping your pets live their happiest, healthiest, fullest lives at home, at the vet, everywhere in between. Visit them at fearfreehappyhomes.com. And let's go to Neil. Hey, Neil, how are you doing?
Okay, I've got a 3-year-old female Doberman Pinscher. And when she was 2 years old, we had her fixed. And ever since she got fixed, or ever since we got her fixed, she has had trouble holding her urine.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever she lays down and goes to sleep, when she gets into a deep sleep, she just leaks all over her bedmans. You can tell that in her face. She knows, hey, I've done something bad, and oh, God, and you know the deal.
It's She's like, embarrassed.
Like catching a, you know, it's like catching a little kid that just wet the bed and don't want to tell you about it. She feels so guilty, but of course you can't scold her because it's an accident.
Exactly.
You know what
yeah.
I mean?
Okay.
So I took her back to the vet. She goes to the vet all the time, you know, and the doctor, our veterinarian, has give us this medication that's very expensive, and I can't remember the name of it, but they're supposed to give her the pill in the morning when she eats and a pill around noon. Of course, we don't give her a lot of water, okay? Now, whenever she goes outside, whenever she needs to go outside, she'll smack the cowbell. We'll take her outside. And her urine is very dark, and you can smell it.
Okay, alrighty. So how is now? Is she still on this medicine, and is it helping her?
Yes and no. It is helping her not wet the bed, but it's we're spending a lot of money masking a problem.
Okay.
You know.
Okay, well, a couple things from what you're saying. Now, the first thing that we'll just want to go over is that the female dogs can definitely develop some incontinence issues, and it basically is most common when we hear stories of dogs that are sleeping or they're coming from a lying position and they get up and then you find a puddle of urine. So for that, in a female dog, yes, most often they are spayed. So for some dogs, it can actually be related to an estrogen deficiency. In other dogs, it's just a matter of the urethral sphincter, and it's just not working well. So there are some great options to help pets that have this. Now, if you're looking for a fix for it, you got it, and it's probably going to be a pill. As far as there are some more, I don't want to say invasive, but some more corrective things, but they're usually involving putting collagen in the bladder and injections, and it's really not something we recommend for the average pet. For most
yeah.
dogs that have this, they can be well controlled with medications. Now, I'm not sure which one your pet is on, but there is a couple different ones we can choose from. One is called phenylpropylamine, also known as PPA, and it's usually given 2 to 3 times a day, and it helps to improve the tone in the urinary sphincter. And for a lot of dogs, that may be all they need to control their symptoms. For other dogs, that may not do enough, and we may go into more of an estrogen compound. And those may be given typically only maybe once or twice a week, because there's, you know, definitely good and bad with all these medicines. I can tell you, my own female dog, 13-and-a-half-year-old gal, she has urinary incontinence, and she's had it since an early age.
Did it just happen overnight?
It can, yeah. It definitely can. The big question is, and granted, I don't know all the details of your pet's health, but when we do diagnose this type of problem, we want to make sure we're not missing something else, because there's a lot of other reasons that can cause a dog to produce a lot of urine and not be able to hold it. And I've actually found a high amount of dogs that start doing this kind of urine leakage. We may treat them with a urinary incontinence medicine, but we're not really maybe always catching the real problem. And I found some dogs are actually developing, they have a kidney problem, a liver problem, or some other disorder, and it just makes them drink more, and they can't hold their urine. So if we just treat for the trying to make them hold their urine, we're not really getting to the heart of things. So if your vet hasn't done a full blood panel, I would recommend that. The other thing, and it kind of concerns me when you say your dog's urine is dark and that you're restricting urine. We should never restrict urine. I'm sorry. That's weird.
Oh, yeah. We should never restrict. Whenever she hits that cowbell, believe me, we go up. She goes right outside.
Okay. What I meant to say is we never want to restrict water for a dog that has an excessive thirst. There could be a lot of negatives with that. So now I'm not opposed to maybe right before bedtime.
We have to really watch the toilet seat.
sneak
in there and get a drink out of the toilet.
You're listening to Animal Radio. Call the Dream Team now with the free Animal Radio app for iPhone and Android.
Hi, this is Mayim Bialik on Animal Radio. Please adopt a pet.
Thousands of authors across the country have written books and published them with Page Publishing. If you've written a book, they can help you through the process, cut through the confusion of the publishing world to make it easy for you. If they decide to publish your book, your work ends, theirs begins. From copy editing and proofing to typesetting and book cover art. Plus, get your book printed, distributed, and sold on Amazon, Apple Books, Barnes & Noble, and in bookstores across the country. They even help promote your book. Biography, self-help, mystery, novels, sci-fi, or even a children's book. No matter what genre, Page Publishing can bring your book to life. And don't forget to ask about audiobooks. We do all of this for you. Call today for your free writer's guide packed with tips, tricks, and templates to help you finish what you started.
800-215-6815. 800-215-6815. 800-215-6815. That's 800-215-6815.
Hi, this is John O'Hurley. You're listening to Animal Radio. And remember, most importantly, please spay or neuter.
You're listening to Animal Radio. Call the Dream Team now with the free Animal Radio app for iPhone and Android.
We're just moments away from the Pet FBI. Apparently, they're not here to see me, but they will have some information for you. Very, very important. That's just around the corner right here on Animal Radio. We're going to go to the phones. Hi, Steve. How are you doing?
Hey, how is everybody out there?
Very good. Where are you?
In Clearwater, Florida.
I'm sorry. I'm just soaking it in.
The beach vision is going through our heads right now. What can I help you with, Steve?
I have a 6-year-old English male bulldog who has a, I think it's pronounced a royal hematoma, also known as pillow ear. Are you familiar with that problem?
I sure am. And just for those that maybe can't hear real clearly, oral hematoma, it's spelled A-U-R-A-L, and it basically means swelling of the ear.
Yes. And the research I've done online, there's no real definitive method of treatment other than do nothing, drain it, or lance it and suture it so it doesn't reoccur as readily as the other two methods. Now, a bulldog having an airway, not a breathing problem, but the airways might be a little bit unique. The thing I'm worried about if he goes for surgery is, you know, the anesthesia and coming out of it and you know, the breathing associated with you know, going into surgery. What's your opinion on an English bulldog?
Okay. Well, I guess I'm going to back up a little bit and talk about what causes some oral hematomas, because in some cases we really don't know what causes it, but often it's directly related to either an ear infection or some really bad, say, scratching allergy type problem, something that causes the pet to repeatedly scratch at the ear, and then it causes the small capillaries in the ear flap to rupture. And what happens is that blood builds up between the cartilage flaps in the ear and the skin, and you basically get a squishy pillow, and that's where the term pillow ear comes from. Now, if we have a problem such as a bad ear condition, ear infections, we have bad skin disease and allergies, the first thing that I will always tell people, if this happens to your dog, is that we need to address those underlying issues or we're not going to get anywhere. We can do surgery and it'll fail if we don't address these other issues, because that underlying itch, the underlying cause, is still going to be there. Now, surgery is historically the way that most folks treat oral hematomas, where we go in and we drain this basically blood blister in the ear and we suture the ear. And there's a lot of different techniques to do that. But the basic concept is we suture the ear so it keeps those flap on the ear nice and tight and firm, so we don't get fluid rebuilding in that pocket that is between the skin and the cartilage. And that can be very successful for pets. And then usually within 2 weeks, that suture can be removed and they heal up wonderfully. But again, if we don't address these other underlying things, then I am definitely not a fan of going to surgery without addressing those things. So I don't know if that's anything for your pet, Steve, if you're having any other kind of skin-related issues.
Well, bulldogs in general have sensitive skin. It might be it's not ear mites or anything in the ear canal, because we do clean his ears out on a weekly basis, and we brought him to the vet, and he checked his ears, and ears are clean. It's you know, just by shaking their head can rupture those blood vessels, apparently, you know, if they, snap it a little bit too hard. So the underlying cause, you know, if you can get the dog to stop shaking its head for whatever reason, even though it might not be related to anything in his ear.
Have they identified that it is an isolated case of a hematoma? They don't know why it's happened? Or are they saying, yes, it's probably because he's got skin problems because he's a bulldog and they all have some degree of allergies? So for your pet, have they just determined that?
Well, we put him back on his allergy medications, which are nothing more than antihistamines, basically, you know, to stop any skin itch that might be causing him to, you know, either shake his head or scratch if he gets a hot spot or something like that. You know, again, the concern is anesthesia and the airway, the bulldog.
And actually, for bulldogs, I mean, they definitely have a lot of different components of problems with their airway. While they're under anesthesia, that's not so much the concern, because there's a tube that's in the airway holding that open, making sure we've got clear oxygen flow. So that's probably the best breathing he's ever going to do, is having that in there. It's all that upper airway problem that they normally have, where they have the long, soft palate. They have the nose that's kind of narrowed, and they have something called saccules that kind of evert and stick into the airway. And then they have a very small trachea. So all those things can make a bulldog's breathing difficult. If your veterinarian is comfortable with the anesthesia of a bulldog, and they don't have any adverse concerns with things, then I'm not opposed to doing surgery on a bulldog. I'm aware of those things. Veterinarians are trained how to deal with that. So that I wouldn't be so worried about. I just want to make sure that surgery is the right choice for your pet, because in some cases, if surgery is not the right choice and there's not a clear ear infection that's causing it, or I can't find a direct reason, a lot of times I am actually of the type where I will use a different protocol than surgery, and I'll use high-dose steroids to decrease the swelling. And in some cases, I've had wonderful success where the pet has a very cosmetic healing of the ear, and it turns around and looks wonderful, and we never actually have to take a scalpel blade to the pet.
Okay, good. I appreciate that advice. Thanks for taking the time to talk with me.
All right, my pleasure.
You're listening to Animal Radio. Call the Dream Team now with the free Animal Radio app.
for iPhone and Android.
How would you like to get a free smartphone? If you own a smartphone, listen to this incredible offer that's almost too good to be true. Right now, you can switch your plan and get service with us for as little as $2 a day. Guaranteed for life. Plus, get a free smartphone every year. Call the free smartphone hotline now and we'll move your number from your existing service. Think of your savings. So don't wait. Switch your plan, save money, plus get a free smartphone every year. Call the free smartphone hotline right now. We guarantee you're going to love our service. If you don't like what we say, you can hang up on us. But you won't. Right now, you can switch your plan and get service with us for as little as $2 a day. Guaranteed for life. Call the free smartphone hotline right now. 800-475-3351. 800-475-3351. 800-475-3351. That's 800-475-3351.
Hey folks, this is Jackson Galaxy. You're listening to Animal Radio. Please do everyone a favor, spay or neuter your animals today.
This is an Animal Radio News Update.
I'm Lori Brooks. What is better than kids and their pets? That just is a cozy picture, isn't it? Well, a study by the Affinity Foundation on the emotional ties between children and pets that live in Spain has shown that 6 in 10 kids say they believe spending time with animals helps them learn to love and respect people more. And 9 out of 10 kids say they would be happy to give up part of their time in order to look after their cat or dog. Also in this study, 8 in 10 kids say they would be prepared to give their toys to their family pet. And 94% of those children say they feel happier when they are in the company of their animals. 9 in 10 also said they would rather have a pet than new toys or other material belongings. And 94% said when asked if animals had feelings or emotions, they believed they did. And Moosey, did you hear this story? A 2-year-old gray tabby cat, his name is Moosey, has been reunited with his family after he incredibly survived a 2-month-long journey while trapped inside of a mattress when his owners moved from Texas to Alaska. A moving company left with the military family's belongings while the family stayed behind in Texas and spent, they say, about 3 more days there searching for Moosey, who had disappeared. Turns out that Moosey was already en route with their belongings to Alaska inside a futon mattress inside the moving truck. Well, the couple was reunited with the cat when the family's belongings finally arrived in Alaska, and the movers unwrapped the mattress, carried it upstairs, and what do you know? There's Moosey. Wow. They rushed him to a vet where he was rehydrated and received a blood transfusion. Moosey's human mom says it's a long road to recovery for Moosey, but they are really looking forward to having him back and getting him nice and healthy again. Good luck to them. I'm Lori Brooks. Get more breaking animal news anytime at animalradio.com.
This has been an Animal Radio News Update. Get more at animalradio.com.
You're listening to Animal Radio. If you missed any part of today's show, visit us at animalradio.com or download the Animal Radio app for iPhone and Android.
It's Animal Radio, celebrating our connection with your pets.
Judy, the studio stunt person, is
wait a minute,
answering phones there and dancing away. Let's see. Oh, this is she there? Oh, this is cool. Let's head on over to her right now. Marissa Finelli is joining us from the Pet FBI. Which
Ooh,
stands,
that sounds so intriguing.
It does. It stands for Pets Found by Internet.
Ooh.
She's utilizing the internet for good, believe that or not.
So she's like a real-life Ace Ventura?
She is. Marissa, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
How are you doing today?
Very well. I'm delighted to have this opportunity to tell people about Pet FBI.
Well, now you started this in 1998.
Yeah, it was probably one of the first lost and found internet databases.
Really? And it was just in Ohio, correct?
Yeah, well, we felt that actually it started out just for Columbus because I felt we really had to be intensive in order to get matches. And at that time, not everybody had computers the way they do today. It was designed originally for shelters to use, but they're very slow in changing their ways.
Sure. So what's the story? This must have been personal for you.
Yeah, well, I had the most traumatic experience of my childhood was when my pet parakeet flew away. Ooh. I never got over that, and I swore I'd never have a pet again. It was so painful. And then when I was married, my husband, who was a cat person, insisted that we get some cats, and the rest is history. We've had many cats over the years, and every now and then one of them
sneaks
despite
out.
All the precautions, there's mm-hmm. always one that slips away. There's one that got out the door, and as recently as you know, about the time I started, we lost a cat, and it went off, and I called the shelter, and I had this naive assumption that all I had to say was, well, has anybody found a tabby in such and such a neighborhood? It doesn't work that way. No, you've got to go in. Yeah. Well, the shelter's on the other side of town. Not so easy to go in, and they're only open certain hours. And then I started thinking, well, what if somebody, you know, works full-time and they can't get there? And what if they give up after a while, and then the pet shows up after? Mm-hmm. You know, they've given up, and then that pet's odds are pretty slim, especially if it's a cat.
So I'm assuming you have cats and dogs. Do you have other animals that people post?
Oh, yeah. No, we've had... it was set up originally to cover the full range of animals, including reptiles, birds, ferrets, small mammals of all kinds, and then we have an other category, and we've even had a few barnyard animals reported, missing horses and a goat and that kind of thing.
So are we nationwide now?
Absolutely, yeah. The database is searchable by zip. Any zip code in the entire United States, also Puerto Rico and the Virgin Islands. You can search it by radius, and it's very flexible. You can go 1 mile, 2 miles, 3 miles. You pick your radius. And so that allows people to cast a net as narrow or as wide as they think is necessary.
Do you have any heartwarming stories of people being reunited or one of your most strangest stories?
Well, want to hear about a tortoise?
Most definitely.
You wouldn't think a tortoise could go far, but this was an African sulcata tortoise. I think that's the name of it. It's a big beast. And it was found a mile away from where it got lost. I guess the people let it out in the yard, and it found its way through the fence somehow. And somebody found it by the side of the road a mile away. Well, they knew it wasn't, you know, a local, you know, animal. It wasn't your garden variety type turtle. So they took it to a pet shop quite far away, several counties away. And the pet shop fortunately knew about Pet FBI, and they checked our database. And the people who had lost the tortoise had posted it, so the tortoise got back home. And another case, it was actually a TV news reporter. She was out in her garden, and this bird alighted on her shoulder. And she happened to know about Pet FBI, and she came in, checked our database, and sure enough, somebody had reported the bird is missing, because birds can go far.
Yeah. And
we've had pets get back after 9 months. That was the maximum.
Mm. Well, very, very cool.
Awesome.
And it's a great use of the technology. I've seen a few of these around, but I can most definitely say if you started this in 1998, you were a pioneer in this area. And so I'm going to encourage listeners to check out petfbi.org.
For people who lose a pet, first, you should be proactive. About 1 in 4 pets are lost at some time during their lifetime. So it's and almost everybody has had the experience of finding a stray. You should have ID on your pet, either a microchip or a collar with a tag. You should have a good picture, because that's really important in helping to recover your pet. And really, you should spay or neuter your pet, because, you know, if there weren't so many unwanted animals in the shelters, it would be much easier to trace a lost pet. The shelters would be able to hold on to the pets longer. And last but not least, don't give up right away. Don't give up too soon.
Amen.
Most recoveries take place within a month, but it's not at all unusual for people to find their pets after several months. And sometimes in the newspaper you read about these spectacular cases where even after a few years they get them back.
Oh, we just reported on one last week, in fact.
With the microchip.
Across the country. You know, for cat owners, the first time I lost my cat, I was like searching all over the neighborhood. But you know what? They're just probably in the bush very nearby the house.
That's absolutely true with cats. They tend not to go far, especially inside cats that slip out. They get terrified. They hide.
Marissa, thanks so much for hanging with us today.
Well, thank you for letting me tell people about Pet FBI. We hope they find it useful. I mean, we hope they don't need it, but if they do, we hope they find it useful.
You're doing great work. Thank you so much for joining us. PetFBI.org. PetFBI.org, of course, links to everything you put on today's show over at AnimalRadio.com.
Vinny Penn, your party animal, coming at you, the party animal segment. Want to talk to you about a little something called dog sitting. A girlfriend of mine is in town this summer. She gave me a new number to call her at. I said, oh, you're not staying with your folks? And she said, well, no, I'm dog sitting for the summer. I'm like, what do you mean dog sitting? Well, my friends went away. I'm staying in there. Well, you're house sitting then, I said to her. You're house sitting. And she's like, well, no, actually, I'm here for the dog. The dog is the priority. I'm like, so if the house is burning down, you run in, you save the dog. You don't run back in for anything else. The house is the dog is the number one priority. Are you going back in maybe for... you know, some documents, some trophies, the people who live there, one of the guys is a doctor. Are you going in for any of his degrees on the walls or is it just the dog? She's like, Vinny, stop ranting and raving. Stop being the party animal. I'm sitting for the dog. And I said, well, why don't you just bring the dog to your house? Unacceptable by the owners. Dog needs to stay in its environment. And I'm like, well, what if that environment burns down, as we just discussed? She's like, listen, I take the dog sitting very seriously. I said, are you being paid for the dog sitting? She's like, no, Vinny, they're friends. And herein came the best part. And I said, so all day long, you're just going to sit around and take care of this dog, take this dog for what? She's like, well, I love the dog. And I'm like, well, of course, I get that. We're all dog lovers. She's like, yeah, I'm just going to swim in the pool. And that's when I really decided, folks, and for my girlfriend Doreen who's listening, you're not dog sitting. And no, you're not house sitting. But you are, my dear, pool sitting.
How would you like to save money on nearly all your prescription drugs? We've set up a special toll-free number for the RX Outreach Program. They're a nonprofit company whose mission it is to make prescription drugs more affordable to the masses. They don't take insurance, and in many cases, your prescriptions are even cheaper than your co-pays. They carry thousands of different prescription drugs, so whatever you're taking, there's a good chance they have it. No coupons are required, and this is not a discount card. It is pure savings on your prescription drugs. They specialize in generic meds for any chronic health needs you have. Call with your prescription and find out for free how little you can pay for your prescription drugs. Remember, we don't take insurance, so call right now.
800-689-0143. 800-689-0143. 800-689-0143. That's 800-689-0143.
You're listening to Animal Radio. Here's Hal and Judy.
It's Animal Radio.
Coming up next hour, Susan Thixton will be joining us. She's created the website truthaboutpetfood.com. She's written a book called Buyer Beware, The Crimes, and the Lies, and the Truth About Pet Food. Dr. Debbie's here to answer your calls, along with Joey Villani. As soon as we're done here, we're going to get on out of here because it's a beautiful day. Take the dogs down to the beach. What?
Well, you have to be careful. You know, this is the time of the year we really need to talk about. I love the beach, take my dog there, and we enjoy it. But you can actually have a dog overdo it in the ocean and drink too much salt water.
Oh, what do you mean?
I want
to
hear about
they
this.
They like to drink it?
Well, especially if they're excited, running around. They don't know the difference initially. So basically what they'll develop is a salt water toxicity or salt poisoning. And it causes a very high increase in the sodium level in the body, and basically it dehydrates them and leads to brain-related symptoms. So a dog that eats or drinks a lot of salt water might just have vomiting and diarrhea, but it can get more severe where they'll actually start having trouble walking, they'll be wobbly, they could develop seizures, become very depressed, and these type of symptoms come on pretty quickly, so usually within 30 to 60 minutes. And so if you are going to the beach with your dog, it is advised to make sure you take good water sources, bowls that are familiar to them, ample fresh water, and you want to stop their playtime and their exercise just so that you can take them aside into the shade and make sure that they are drinking clear, fresh water.
Did you have a client that came in?
Well, I didn't have one, but she was she had a friend who did, and she was going to visit them over in some of the Dog Beach areas, and she was really concerned because she didn't want her goofy lab to do the same thing. And as part of the thing, you know, dogs are running, they're having a great time, and if they're like a dog from my area where they're used to drinking lake water, they may not know the difference initially, and they can get into a bad place. So it is something very serious. So if it happens, you need to get your dog to the veterinarian right away. This is something you cannot treat. It does take very delicate balance of intravenous fluids to manage it, monitoring electrolytes, and we do a very gradual decrease in the sodium levels. So something to be aware of, and just make sure, just like a kid at the beach, you want to make sure you take that break, get the shade, kind of look out for them out there.
Okay, didn't know that. I know Ladybug, she used to...
Yeah, neither did I. My dogs run away from the beach.
I was going to say, Ladybug...
and they run to the sidewalk.
Oh, see, Ladybug just runs from the waves. She'll walk along the sand.
She doesn't run into the water?
No, she runs away.
Huh, most dogs run into the water.
She won't even get her...
She's bait.
She won't even get her feet wet.
I think Joey's right about that. Hey, Deb, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. Where are you today?
New Jersey. I'm at home.
In Jersey. How can we help you?
I have two miniature schnauzers, and one of them is a white schnauzer, about 8 years old, and she licks her paws constantly, and she's got brown paws because of it.
And is it just her paws that she's licking at, or are there other areas?
No, just her paws.
And I'd imagine she probably has that nice, lovely kind of reddish-brown kind of stain to that.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah. And we see that so much in dogs. And typically, when we see paw licking, you will see that kind of staining of the fur, especially if it's a white-coated dog or a light in color. And that's from a pigment in their saliva. And it's called porphyrin, and it causes a brown staining. So you wouldn't believe how many times I hear people say there's blood all over their feet, and it's actually that pigment that they're seeing.
Yeah.
So when that is happening, the first one thing we go looking for, beyond broken toenails or any kind of injuries in between the toes, is we really look at things like allergies. And white schnauzers, I sympathize with you, because they can have their share of skin problems. And licking at the paws is just part of that. As far as allergy-wise, could be allergies to things in the air, can be food. So there's a lot of different directions we might go with this baby. Do you have her on any kind of medications? Have you tried anything so far?
Yeah, so far we've changed her food a few times. Now she's on medicine, but that doesn't seem to be helping. She's also on 2 5-milligram pills of prednisone every other day, and don't think it's working. I don't think it's working, but then when I stop, it seems like it was working.
Okay. Alrighty.
And that's about all we've tried so far.
Okay. Now, at any point, have we done any kind of sampling from her toe areas, from her feet? Has your veterinarian looked at that to see if there's any infections there?
Yes, the vet has looked several times. We've brought her in maybe a half a dozen times over the 2 years we've had her.
Well, as far as if we're dealing with just a presumed diagnosis of allergies, then there's a lot of different ways we can go here. I personally always like to get some sampling from the area, because if we have any kind of yeast infection or bacterial infection on top of things, you know, even prednisone isn't going to be enough to tackle that. But some of the better allergy therapies we can try, you know, if you're really interested in this, we can get into things like allergy testing and getting a pet on allergy shots to help prevent some of the signs of the itching, the licking, the chewing, all of that. There's also a wonderful medicine called cyclosporin that I use for a lot of dogs that have chronic problems, especially when prednisone doesn't do enough. So that might be an option that we can get at. All of those different directions, and then a good fatty acid supplement into the food. And then the venison diet that you're using, I'm assuming you're not using other treats or snacks or goodies along with that.
I wasn't for like the past year, and then we just bought some milk bones.
Okay, because you know what that does then, right?
No, I don't.
If we're on a special diet, a diet that you're spending extra money on, and you give treats or you give snacks or table food or anything, you're just flushing all that money down the toilet, because a hypoallergenic diet does no good if we still have other foodstuffs in the diet that can interfere with that. So if we really want to be sincere about giving it a good effort on that venison-based diet, you need to eliminate all those other things.
That's like going to Burger King and ordering the biggest burger they had and then getting a Diet Coke, right? I mean, it just...
Hey, I do that.
We wish you the best of luck, Deb.
Well, thank you very much for your help. I appreciate it.
Thousands of authors across the country have written books and published them with Page Publishing. If you've written a book, they can help you through the process, cut through the confusion of the publishing world to make it easy for you. If they decide to publish your book, your work ends, theirs begins. From copy editing and proofing to typesetting and book cover art. Plus, get your book printed, distributed, and sold on Amazon, Apple Books, Barnes & Noble, and in bookstores across the country. They even help promote your book. Biography, self-help, mystery, novels, sci-fi, or even a children's book, no matter what genre, Page Publishing can bring your book to life. And don't forget to ask about audiobooks. We do all of this for you. Call today for your free writer's guide packed with tips, tricks, and templates to help you finish what you started.
800-215-6815. 800-215-6815. 800-215-6815. That's 800-215-6815.
Celebrating the connection with our pets. This is Animal Radio, featuring your dream team, veterinarian Dr. Debbie White and groomer Joey Villani. And here are your hosts, Hal Abrams and Judy Francis.
At this hour, Susan Thixton will be joining us, the creator of the truthaboutpetfood.com. She's going to tell you about the crimes and the lies and the truth about pet food companies. They're making a lot of money and they're lying to you.
They're lying.
Those darn liars.
Hi,
Shelba.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What's going on in your part of the world?
My animals have got whipworm.
Whipworm? What is that, doctor?
I've got 39 cats and 17 dogs, and everybody's throwing up and diarrhea. I took a couple to the vet. They had a bad case of whipworms. The medicine cost over $300. I've been giving it to them, and all they do is puke now and diarrhea.
Oh, no. Yikes. Yeah, whipworms, and Hal, you asked what they are. They're basically a parasite that just kind of lives in the lower bowel and can cause diarrhea. It can cause cramping, pain. Some dogs and cats will even have low red blood cell counts. They may be anemic or have protein losses from them. So, yeah, they can be actually, you know, a bad parasite, and they're very tough to get rid of. So
they're contagious, right?
Well, and contagious, but these little suckers, they pass an egg, and the eggs live in the environment. Or I shouldn't say they live. They can sit in the environment for very long periods of time, and they're very resistant, and that's the big problem. So I don't know, is this a new problem for you, Shelba, or has that been ongoing?
Yeah, it is. When I left California, my animals were all fine. I run a rescue league, and I just save animals, and everybody's been fine. I had everybody checked before I left. It's shots and everything, and now I come into this. Yeah, I got down here, and now all the kids are sick and diarrhea, and then the doctor says they got whipworms. My little chihuahua was ripped up by a stray dog. He lived, but it cost me $2,000 to rip the stomach and everything out of him.
Oh, my goodness. Horror. Well, he's lucky to be with you there at this point. So as far as in dealing with things like whipworms, now you're in a pretty unique situation there with that many critters. So you may have to really modify and kind of work with your veterinarian as far as with what is going to work on your end. But for the average person with one or two pets or a few animals, basically with dogs, what I recommend is to make sure that they are on a monthly heartworm preventative. And that also, there are several types that also take care of controlling for whipworms on a monthly basis. And one that I can easily recommend is the Advantage Multi, and it's actually a spot-on product. But we realize we are not going to get rid of the whipworms. We're going to try to control them. And that is being totally realistic with our expectations. And a lot of folks that have these recurrent problems, I will set the pet up on a also an oral deworming protocol every 3 months. So we treat with it a different type of dewormer. We do that every 3 months, no matter what, no matter if the pets are healthy or if they are not showing any signs of any problems.
Okay.
So it is a really tough strategy. I've had people ask me, what can I do to get rid of them in my yard? And, you know, you can take a flamethrower to your yard and you'll probably still have these critters kind of laying around there just waiting to develop into the actual infective forms and so forth. So, yeah,
right.
It is a battle.
That advantage is expensive, isn't it?
It can be, you know, when you're talking, you know, what do you have, you know, 50-some animals, that can add up.
47 cats and 29 dogs and 9 birds and a 10-foot iguana.
Yeah.
And you know, iguana won't get it, Willie.
What's that?
Will the iguana get the whipworms too, you think? For the birds?
Potentially.
But the birds haven't been doing good either. The water here is terrible. There's rust in it.
Oh, dear.
I think
that's
where they got it from, because they didn't have nothing when we got here.
I mean, the water would be one source, but this is something that's totally environmental. So it could be from previous pets that have resided in that area, from wild dogs that have walked through and defecated in the area. So it's probably going to be very hard to impossible to say where it actually started from. So I wouldn't bog yourself down with that. Now, the other things we might look at, especially when we're dealing with a larger population or a population of young dogs and kittens, would be to try probiotics, things that can help stimulate a healthy immune response. And that can be very helpful when we're dealing with some of the chronic parasite infections. And those can be, talk to your veterinarian. There's a lot of different products out there, powders, some different gels or liquids. And that basically just kind of helps improve the pet's immune system. We know that the GI system is basically where a lot of the different immune receptors are. So we want to try to keep that as healthy as possible, and it'll hopefully translate into helping equip them for that battle against those critters. So my best wishes go out to you there, because you do have a daunting task. And, you know, I know you're doing a rescue, but sometimes even closing the population to incoming pets and trying to make sure we deal with everyone who's in there and try to deal with them and maybe even thin out the herd a little bit once you get them placed into homes or adopted, that social stress can also help with some of these problems. So best wishes to you.
All of our blessings for you.
Hey, Jesse, what's going on with your cat?
She's about 2.5 years old. Last Friday, she started throwing up in the middle of the night, and it was, looked like just partially digested food. Went on till Monday, and I went ahead and took her to the vet there in town. The vet did a feces test and felt around on her and everything and said, well, I can't really find anything that's wrong. She gave her an antibiotic shot and an anti-nausea shot.
Okay.
Sent me home with some antibiotics in liquid form. Told me to mix it up with her food or give it to her straight every day until it was gone. And so if the throwing up didn't quit within a couple days, bring her back. Well, the anti-nausea medicine apparently worked because she didn't throw up for 2 days.
Okay.
And she's back to throwing up again. If we feed her soft food, it seems like she holds it down. But anytime she gets a hold of any of that hard food, it comes back up.
Okay. Well, and are you feeding any particular diet?
Normally it's just Purina cat chow indoor formula.
Okay.
And that's what she's always been fed.
Well, I mean, we certainly can see some food intolerances or food sensitivities, if you will, and that could be to not only ingredients, different proteins or carbohydrates, but it could also be to the different preservatives in food. So while it is possible that your pet does better with canned food than versus a dry, I don't know if I'm going to completely kind of blame your situation on that. And I guess I'd still be wondering whether or not there's something else going on. And kitties, vomiting is, I gotta be honest, it's one of the most frustrating things that we veterinarians deal with, because cats are just so silent about these things. And vomiting could be anything from a hairball that's building up in that stomach to a liver problem, to a foreign object that they ingest, to parasites. So there's so many different gamuts of causes of that. And if it's still continuing with the conservative care and with what they've done so far, I guess my gut instinct next would be I'd probably get a couple things to help us make that decision where to go next. And that would be getting an x-ray and even a blood panel on your baby. Now, food-wise, if she does well in the canned food and you're happy continuing that and she seems to be thriving, then I don't see a problem with that. But as far as my concern would be that we might just be finding something that kind of temporarily relieves some of the symptoms and but doesn't quite resolve it completely. So that would be my suggestion here. And as far as, you know, the other option is there's some very good diets that we can use for a pet that has a sensitive stomach or that has some kind of digestive upset, and they may be a temporary diet. So you can always talk to your veterinarian about that if you're not on board for kind of looking into things. But, you know, I can tell you that, you know, I know Hal and Judy, we've been through some issues as far as with your kitty, as far as with dealing with some vomiting issues. And it took a lot of work to kind of find the bottom of the problem there.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, the thing that bothers me most, I guess, is that she's, from the time she was a kitten, she was an outside cat. She'll come inside to eat and use the bathroom. She won't go to the bathroom outside. You know, we've always tried to keep her in the house, but she refuses. I mean, and she's so fast, you open the door, she's gone.
Okay.
And so even the vet brought up, and I had thought that before I went to the vet, was that maybe she had got a hold of something outside, ate a bird or something. And, you know, but the vet, the reason I guess why I'm calling you guys is because the vet that I went to wasn't the normal person that day. It was a younger girl, and I just kind of worried about the experience that she had.
Okay. Now, I got to say, I have kind of a youthful look about me, and I get almost, well, maybe since I hit the big 4-0, I don't get it all the time. But I used to get all the time where people would say, you're just too young to be a vet. And, you know,
I didn't mean it like that.
But I've been on the other side of that, and I understand what you're getting at is that if you don't feel comfortable with the information you're getting, it is, you know, it's our job as pet caretakers to make sure we find the resources that we are comfortable with. So, you know, if you didn't just quite click with that person and you didn't feel comfortable, then, you know, maybe get a second opinion. But I would say here at my office, I tend to be a bit investigational. I like to, you know, if we don't find some improvement with this conservative therapy, I really would want to get some more ammunition here. What do we need to be battling here? Do we have something in there, like you had mentioned, you know, like a bird or a piece of a foreign object or something like that? I'd want to make sure that we're not missing things there. So I would say, let's go looking a little bit more.
You'd be running all kinds of tests, wouldn't you, Doc?
Well, now you make me sound like I'm kind of some kind of nut there.
No.
But no. But definitely with a vomiting situation, some of the basics would be a fecal test, a basic blood panel, and then x-rays. And those would make good sense to me for any kitty that would be having ongoing vomiting problems. So
go back to the doc and get those tests if you haven't gotten them yet, okay?
Okay, yeah, I absolutely will.
Okay, thanks for your call today. 1-866-405-8405. No, what I was just saying there, Doc, is that you're very aggressive with your treatment, and that's why you're the Animal Radio Vet, and that's why you're answering listener questions. This is a good thing. That's all I'm saying.
Thank you.
For every puppy purchased from a pet store or a breeder, a homeless dog at an animal shelter loses the chance of ever going for a romp in the park, chasing a ball, or feeling secure in a real home. Dogs and cats in shelters are waiting for someone kind to come along. So if you or anyone you know is ready for the responsibility of giving an animal a lifelong home full of patience, understanding, and respect, please adopt, don't shop.
If you're living with diabetes and using insulin, you know the pain of pricking your fingers over and over again. Ouch! Well, by wearing a small remote device called a continuous glucose monitor, or CGM, you can reduce the pain of pricking your fingers. If you administer insulin 3 or more times per day or use an insulin pump, call now and learn how a CGM can help you.
Painless. No more
pricking my finger.
No finger pricks.
Convenience. They delivered it free and they took care of all the paperwork.
You can reduce pain right away. Plus, it's accurate, easy to use, and helps you spend more time in range. And if you have insurance, you can get a new CGM at little or no out-of-pocket cost. Call now and get free shipping of your new CGM. Plus, we'll bill your insurance for you. 800-785-1673. 800-785-1673. 800-785-1673. That's 800-785-1673.
This is Glenn Close on Animal Radio, urging you to spay or neuter your pet.
You're listening to Animal Radio. Call the Dream Team now with the free Animal Radio app for iPhone and Android.
Just a few minutes right here on Animal Radio. We're going to hear from pet food safety advocate Susan Thixton and the truth about pet food, the crimes, the lies, the truth that you may think is a truth isn't a truth, because the pet food companies will do almost anything to get your business. That's on the way right here in just a couple of minutes right here on Animal Radio. We'll head back to the phones in just a couple of seconds. What are you working on over there, Lori?
Well, there is yet more research out that confirms we pet owners are the happiest, the healthiest, and the wealthiest. And
really?
We'll tell you how we know that. Yeah.
Well, I know I'm the happiest.
I'm thinking that the best news would be if they would say that shelter pets would make us skinny. I think there would be a rush on shelter pets. Wouldn't that? We're going to have to figure out that link.
We could start that rumor.
Well, you know what? You actually work out more. You become more energetic. You're taking the animals for walks. And in turn, you get skinnier. It is.
That's true.
There is a link. Anyway.
Yeah, there is.
On the way in just a couple of minutes with Lori Brooks right here on Animal Radio. Hey, Bob.
How you doing?
Good. How you doing?
Fat and sassy.
Fat and sassy. I'll have to remember that. Write that one down. That's good. I like it. Fat and sassy. Where are you fat and sassy from today?
Oh, here in California.
In California. Okay. How can we help you?
Well, I got a golden retriever. He's about not quite a month and a year and a half, just almost a little under a year and a half.
Okay.
And he's a couple times he's had problems with his backside. His tail would not, he'd stop. If you moved from side to side, it didn't bother him, but if you tried to lift it, it did. And we noticed that he was constipated.
Huh, okay.
So this happened one time, and evidently he cleared himself up because he came back in the house, and he went for 2 or 3 days like that, and then he was fine. He come back in, he's just happy as can be, and everything's fine. He did it again for 2 or 3 days, just recently, just this last week, and now he's fine again. And I don't know
okay.
if the tail being stiff and, you know, holding it down, but tucking it between his legs and not moving it, if that's got something to do with constipation or not.
Well, yeah, it certainly can. And anything that kind of goes on in the whole hindquarter area can definitely affect the carriage of the tail, or basically how well that they hold it up and wag it and show off the, especially a golden retriever, those gorgeous feathers that they have.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, when he was constipated, were you pretty comfortable that you saw hard to pass poops, or was he having diarrhea, or
no,
tell me about
the
poop story.
He was having a hard time passing it.
Okay. And then when it came out, it was dry and oversized?
Well, my son said it was okay. I mean, he's 24, so you got to know. I mean, that wasn't home. He called me and said, you know, he finally went to the bathroom, and it looked, I asked him if it looked good, or, you know, what it looked like. He said, well, it looked like poop.
Huh, okay. Because typically, if I expect a pet to be constipated, you know, let's get serious about describing poop here on the air. We're looking for, you know, constipated poop is usually dry, hard to pass, oversized. If we're not seeing that corresponding with when he was having troubles, it could be something else causing pain. So it may not necessarily be a constipation issue. So if we got pretty good confirmation, and, you know, your son should know, everyone knows crap to some degree, but if you're comfortable that he's described that and said, yeah, Dad, you know, this is really some unusual looking poop. It's dry. It looked like, you know, he was having a hard time passing it. If not, then we'd definitely go looking for other things. And now, does your dog do much swimming?
No, not right now.
I got to tell my dogs that, because my dogs are in the pool, I swear, you know, three times a day still.
Well, you got that warm climate there going for you.
Yeah, but we've got the pool covered up right now, and he plays in the mud and everything. He's happy now. I mean, he ate good during the whole time. He just didn't get rid of it, and he walked funny, and he'd go out, and he'd try to go, and he'd strain and everything. He just couldn't do anything, but I was worried about it. You know, it's the second time it's happened to him, and I don't know if it's something he ate in the yard or what.
Yeah, in that inconsistent, the occasional trouble going to the bathroom, it's certainly possible, you know, that, you know, he acquired something that was more interesting than the typical dog food, and that could cause some havoc going through. And then I'd want to make sure that we're feeding just a consistent diet, and we're not switching things up, giving him table scraps or, you know, any kind of bones. Even a dog that, say, gets rawhide chews, nothing necessarily wrong with that. But we can see a pattern of inconsistent poops for many dogs that have that ingest rawhides. It can cause the diarrhea, and then it can kind of look like they're having trouble passing the subsequent poop. So I would say, go ahead.
Tree limbs. He eats tree limbs and twigs.
Ah!
Ah! All right.
All he's fascinated with them. He comes in there like toothpicks with him. He comes in and chews them up on the floor.
Oh, gotta stop that.
I think he's a woodpecker.
Well, definitely. I mean, as far as a lot of these guys, they look for stuff to chew. And, you know, if he is ingesting things like that, tree limbs, you know, your neighbor's shrubs, what have you, then that definitely that can create some havoc going through. So you might want to work. My prescription for you might be to really super monitor his intake and his output over a period of a week to 2 weeks. And during that time, watch him closely, make sure he doesn't have access to some of these different behaviors of chewing, and see what those poops are looking like. If everything's going good and we're comfortable that he's not getting into other things, then we may be comfortable to say, that occasional problem is likely to eating that bough off that tree or, you know, chewing something in the yard. But yeah, definitely, I make light of it, but, you know, we don't want to encourage that kind of chewing behavior because it just sets up for whole sets of digestive problems and foreign objects and all that wonderful stuff.
He shouldn't be doing that.
I've got a doggy door, and him and the other dog go out in and out a lot. He'll come in, he'll try to drag one through the door, you know. He'll have 1-4 feet long sometimes.
That's not good for him.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for your call today.
You're listening to Animal Radio. Call the Dream Team now with the free Animal Radio app for iPhone and Android.
Hello, this is Jane Goodall on Animal Radio. And I'd just like everybody to realize that each day you live, you make some difference on the planet. And you can choose what kind of difference you're going to make. And hopefully every day you'll try to make the world a little bit better for people, for animals, and for the environment.
Do you travel with your dog?
Of course. My pets are part of our family.
Me too. I take Daisy with me everywhere.
Right, Daisy?
So how do you find out what hotels welcome your dog?
I read Fido Friendly, the travel and lifestyle magazine for you and your dog.
Sounds perfect for planning our next vacation. Right, Daisy?
It is. Their motto is Leave No Dog Behind, and they have great hotel and destination reviews.
Where can I find the magazine?
Go online to FidoFriendly.com.
I will for sure. Come on, Daisy. We're off to find our next adventure.
This is an Animal Radio News update.
I'm Lori Brooks. Hey, there's more research out showing that having a cat or dog, yep, it makes you happier, richer, and healthier. Blue Cross Pet Charity has conducted a survey of pet owners and found that they tend to earn nearly $5,000 a year more than those who don't have a pet. And also pet owners are more likely to have a full-time job. Pet owners are also, they say, happier in general, spend more time with their families, and more likely to have a job that they enjoy. In fact, 10% more pet owners agreed they were definitely truly happy in their current job roles compared to non-pet owners. Researchers say they found pet owners are also more fit and healthy because we complete at least 2 hours more of exercise a week than those people who don't have a pet. There is a warning for pet owners now out there after a cat was found with its head stuck in a rodent trap, of all things. It happened in England, but pet owners everywhere are being asked to look out now because they say that these traps can also kill smaller pets like cats and tiny dogs. This cat, who was seriously injured in England, was caught in what's called a fen trap. It's meant for squirrels and rats, but luckily that cat was found and then rescued by a Good Samaritan. Now, since the incident in England last month, the SPCA is now calling on people everywhere to be aware that setting these traps, like the fen trap, could be breaking laws. While it's not illegal if the traps kill rodents, they say if the trap kills a domestic animal, the owner could be prosecuted by police in some jurisdictions.
Well, you can now spy on your napping cats or dogs from your smartphone in HD, no less. Nest recently announced an upgraded version of the DropCam wireless security camera. The Nest Cam is about $200, and it now has two-way communication. And I guess they say this communication is so good that you could literally yell at a burglar or even listen to your dog bark, say, at the TV that you probably leave on to keep him company. The camera also has a magnetic base, which gives you another option for mounting it. Maybe, like, you know, you could put it on your refrigerator or your stove, which is great if you keep your pets in the kitchen, like a lot of people do, while you're at work for the day. I'm Lori Brooks. Get more breaking animal news anytime at animalradio.com.
This has been an Animal Radio News Update. Get more at animalradio.com.
You're listening to Animal Radio. Call the Dream Team now with the free Animal Radio app for iPhone and Android.
It's Animal Radio, and we're celebrating your connection with your pets. Don't forget, you can ask your questions of Dr. Debbie and Joey Villani directly from the Animal Radio app for iPhone and Android. And it is a free download, and there's a lot more going on over at that app than you think. You should check it out now. I was amazed. Pretty big. A lot of information, recalls, all the recall, the news that you need to know for your pets over there. I'm going to download it again after the show. I already have it, but it's so good, I'm just going to download it again.
You get twice as much info, huh?
We have joining us on the phone, Susan Thixton. Hi, Susan. How are you doing?
I'm doing wonderful. Thank you for having me.
Of course. Susan is the founder of the website truthaboutpetfood.com. She's also written a book called Buyer Beware, Crimes, Lies, and the Truth About Pet Food, and has a brand new book out called Dinner Pausable, which has some great recipes for homemade meals for your cats and dogs. We'll talk about that in just a couple of seconds here. But what I want to know, what are the crimes and lies that our pet food companies are telling us that we should be aware of as consumers when we go to the shelves and we see all these thousands of different brands of food? What lies should we take in mind at that time?
The label. You see images of the biggest to me is roasted chicken and grilled steak. You can literally see the grill marks on the meat on the product label. There is not one pet food out there whose meat is roasted or grilled before it is made. So that is actually a lie, and it is a violation of pet food regulations. No one enforces it. The biggest is that these images on labels and actually the name pet food is not regulated by food laws. It is regulated by feed laws, feed like in cattle feed and chicken feed. And feed, since the main purpose of it is only to fatten the animal up as quickly as possible in preparation for slaughter for human food, feed ingredients don't have to be as quality as food ingredients. So the biggest thing your listeners can learn is to call the manufacturer and ask if the pet food ingredients are the term they want to ask are human edible.
Human grade? Is that it? Human edible or human grade?
The manufacturers can kind of twist those words. So the FDA term is human edible.
It is a close to $60 billion a year business. Over $21 billion of it goes to our pet food. So these companies, it's all about the money for them. Some bottom line, well, that's the bottom line of any business. And I've noticed in the last year, at least four or five companies merge with other companies. So there's really just a handful of food companies making all of the food. Does that mean all of it's sourced from the same place, even though it might be a different brand?
Basically, yes. Yeah. You know, the chicken suppliers are Tyson and Purdue, and, you know, and you'd think, oh, that's a good thing, but with that feed quality ingredient, it's the leftover and rejected. So it's not, that's where you want it to be, human grade, human edible quality, because you don't want the leftovers.
Can I just say human quality means nothing to me because I see some of that pink slime that they make meat out of.
Human, yeah.
And that's human quality. That's human grade.
But, But honestly, human quality pink slime is light years higher quality than pet grade. Mm-hmm. Pet grade can literally be rejected for use in human food, diseased animals. There's compliance policies, FDA compliance policies, that literally allow, they openly say that pet food is allowed to source meats from diseased animals and animals which have died other than by slaughter. And that means in a cow that died out in the field, and it laid there for 3 days, and then the truck came and hauled it away, and that meat is legally allowed by FDA to be included in your pet food without consumer knowledge.
Mm. What you said, the FDA is not enforcing some of these things, like the pictures on the front of the labels, and that's illegal, and they're not why aren't they enforcing this, especially in light of several major recalls over the last couple of years?
I wish I knew the answer to that question. I report these images to FDA every time I see a product with these labels. I just did this probably 2 months ago. Took a bunch of pictures at a pet food store and sent them all to the compliance division at FDA, and they do nothing. The states are the same. States also, each state in the U.S. has regulatory authority over pet food. And I've reported it to them time and time again, and they just don't do it.
Have we made any inroads? I know that there was talk about more regulation over pet food after the last recall. Have we made any inroads?
From 2007 recall to now, nothing has changed. Regulatory-wise, absolutely nothing. That same disaster could happen again at any moment. You know, there's still, just as you said a few minutes ago, that there's just a handful of manufacturers in their manufacturing for other private label names. That's exactly as it was in 2007, and that's what caused this issue. Ingredients are still being sourced from China. Consumer is not told if ingredients are sourced from China on the product label. It's nothing has changed since 2007.
Well, the labels now say made in the USA. Sure, they may be made in the USA, but they're still sourced in China.
So exactly.
Trying to get around that. The book is called Dinner Possible. I want to go ahead and give away 5 copies right now. If you're not lucky enough to get on through, you can head on over to Amazon.com and check it out. Dinner Possible, P-A-W-S-I-B-L-E. Thanks so much for joining us, Susan.
Well, thank you for having me.
Good day, animal lovers. It is time for your resident party animal, and that'd be me, Vinny Penn. Just hung up the phone with my sister who lives out in Las Vegas. She had to go because she was having what she called a play date with her dog. She has a girlfriend who got the same dog, same time as her. Technically, the dogs are brothers. I don't know, brother and sister or sisters. I don't know. I never inquire about the sex of the animal when a dog is introduced into a family. But she said, yeah, we're having a play date with the dogs. And I said, well, this is a brilliant idea. And she said, yeah, she comes over once a week and we let the dogs play in the yard. And then we get to catch up. We also have a yappy hour, she said. And I said, excuse me? She goes, yeah, yappy hour. You know, we have drinks. We'll crack open a couple of bottles of wine. And I thought to myself, this is not a play date for the dogs. No matter what clever name you come up with, whatever, guys, this is an excuse for you to get drunk with your girlfriend under the ruse that you care about your animals, and then drive the little guy home drunk. And I've met her friend Anne-Marie before. I could see her propping her dog up in her lap and having that dog steer the car. Yappy hour.
Thousands of authors across the country have written books and published them with Page Publishing. If you've written a book, they can help you through the process, cut through the confusion of the publishing world to make it easy for you. If they decide to publish your book, your work ends, theirs begins. From copy editing and proofing to typesetting and book cover art. Plus, get your book printed, distributed, and sold on Amazon, Apple Books, Barnes & Noble, and in bookstores across the country. They even help promote your book.
biography, self-help, mystery, novels, sci-fi, or even a children's book. No matter what genre, Page Publishing can bring your book to life. And don't forget to ask about audiobooks. We do all of this for you. Call today for your free writer's guide packed with tips, tricks, and templates to help you finish what you started.
800-215-6815. 800-215-6815. 800-215-6815. That's 800-215-6815.
You're listening to Animal Radio.
Olga, how are you doing today? Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from South Lake Tahoe, California.
I love it up there. Absolutely beautiful. What's going on?
Well, it's about my cat. I rescued her from a shelter about a year ago, and they were going to euthanize her because she had a sick stomach. She pooped everywhere in the complex, I guess, and she was a hoarder cat, and the lady that adopted her brought her back because she pooped on her bed and in her everywhere in her house. So anyway, I rescued her. I couldn't see them doing that.
Well, good for you.
And because coyotes got my two previous cats, and it just broke my heart. But anyway, I volunteered, and that's how I found her. But anyway, she just within the last 4 days, she's like lethargic, or I don't know if I'm saying that right. Lethargic.
Uh-huh.
She hardly moves. She's drinking water, a lot of water. She poops a little bit. She doesn't eat very much. She only weighs 6.5 pounds, and that's how much she weighed when I got her. Mm-hmm. But I don't know what to do with her. I'm scared to death. I didn't sleep last night because I know she's gonna pass away or something. She's okay. Cold all the time, so I keep the heater on for her, and slept in the living room with her. So mm-hmm. I don't know what to do. She eats. I buy good food for her in the store, but she likes the extra, the little things that you give as a treat. She likes better.
Now, can I ask you, is she having any other symptoms like coughing, vomiting, any diarrhea?
No. She used to bleed when she pooped all the time, and she sure pooped. But now she's
currently, though. I mean, as far as anything currently in the last week or two.
No, in the last week, no. Well, she had a little cold a while back, but in the last week, she keeps licking her mouth, and I don't know, blinking her eyes. And I just thought, well, maybe she has a cold or symptoms of something like that.
Okay. So, Alda, can she stand up? Can she move around on her own?
Yeah, she does, but she's doing it so slowly, and she doesn't sleep in my bed the last 4 days. She comes in the living room and sleeps there. You know, maybe she's warmer there because I keep the heat on, a little heater I bought for her.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll tell you, Alda, this is definitely a situation where I really recommend you taking this kitty to a veterinarian. The reason is because there can be so many things we could be missing if I start giving you suggestions on what you can do at home to help an ailing cat, when there can be so much that a veterinarian can gain from a physical exam. And in many cases, that can help give us an idea of what direction we need to go. As far as, you know, you mentioned the licking of the mouth.
Yeah.
Sometimes cats will do that when they're nauseated. Sometimes they can do that when they have dental problems. And sometimes it can happen just with some other types of oral disease or ulcers that could even be going on. So as a veterinarian, I can tell you, just making that list of things that could be causing any one of those symptoms, I would really need to see your kitty. And that's a very, very important step in kind of deciding where we can go from there. And I understand some folks may not say, oh, Dr. Debbie, you always want to run tests. And, I do. Because that's how we figure out some things. But really, the best value in veterinary medicine is that face time, that physical exam with your veterinarian. So that would be the first thing I would start with. But if I have a kitty that especially comes from a kind of a rescue background that has these symptoms, I want to make sure that we talk about viral testing them. Because things like kitty leukemia and kitty AIDS can be kind of a slow onset type problem. And they can definitely cause lethargy, problems with them eating, respiratory infections, a lot of other things. So that would be something to think about and talk to your veterinarian about. Now, and then from there, depending on what they think or what they feel where we might be going if we want to try some symptomatic therapy. Some simple things we can try, like for me, I will try just something as simple as taking really stinky canned cat food. The fish flavors are kind of my favorite, and just kind of zapping that on the microwave on a low setting just to get a little steamy and get the odor going. And for cats that are having trouble eating, sometimes that helps kind of stimulate their appetite, and especially if they're congested or having a respiratory problem, they might not be smelling so good. So that can help them smell their food.
This is wet cat food. I've never fed her wet cat food, but is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I would say if your kitty is not eating anything for several days, that's when we pull out the cat food in the canned cat food. Okay, so yeah, definitely. And some other simple things, you know, veterinarians will try when we try kind of what we call outpatient care for not eating or dehydration. We might administer some subcutaneous fluids under the skin and do that either in the office setting, or some folks can be trained to do that at home. So that can be a supportive step. Some other things, we do have appetite stimulants, one called mirtazapine I use a lot with cats. And if they're not eating from a variety of problems, kidney problems, other medical issues, we might try a medication like that, and it can help to stimulate the appetite of a kitty who's not feeling so well. But even other simple things like dewormings, you know, pretty cheap, inexpensive, and simple to do. So if we have a cat that's just not thriving.
Yeah, she's not functioning, but just up till 4 days ago.
Yeah. Well, you know, the important thing that I want you to know, any of our listeners, if a cat stops eating for 3 days, if they stop eating everything, they can go into liver failure. So it is very important we not delay when cats stop eating.
I heard you say that. I've been listening
to you. Yeah. And I can sense in your sigh that you're like, oh, I didn't want to have to do that. But really, I have to be the advocate for your kitty. And if ever a kitty needed to see a vet, just to, so you know where you're at and what you can and can't do to try to nurse her along. And I think that's very important. And that'll empower you. So how you can better help her.
All right, Dr. Debbie. I will these things down. And so I'll proceed.
Thank you for your call, Olga. Well, there you go. Thank you so much, Marisa Finelli and Susan Thixton, for joining us today. Awesome information from you guys. You can learn more over at animalradio.com and download the Animal Radio app now. It's a free download.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
This is Animal Radio Network.